strategic planning and budgeting. We begin with strategy, and within strategy, there's levels of strategy and then long-term missions and goals. Levels of strategy, there's corporate strategy, business strategy, and functional strategy. Corporate strategy is the corporation's strategy at the entity level. It's issues facing the whole company. Business strategy involves decision making about a particular business or business segment or industry that a business is in. And then functional strategy is a strategy within a function of the corporation itself, like marketing, operations, accounting, finance, sales, HR, etc. So there's corporate strategy, and then drilling down into business strategy, and then within the company, there's functional strategy. Then there's long-term missions and goals. And within long-term missions and goals, there's vision, mission, goals, and objectives. So vision is, like, a vision statement is the organization's objectives expressed in terms of some grand contribution to society. So Tesla's vision statement is to accelerate the world's transition to sustainable energy. Mission helps to achieve the vision. So a mission statement refers to how the organization intends to create value for its stakeholders and how it will achieve its vision. So Tesla's mission statement is to create the most compelling car company of the 21st century by driving the world's transition to electric vehicles. Then there's goals. And within goals, there's strategic goals and tactical goals. Strategic goals are long-term. Tactical goals are short-term in nature. So a strategic goal would be like to acquire some level of market share by some date. A tactical goal is how we are going to get there incrementally. So a tactical goal would be increase production capacity by 20% this year. So strategic is long-term, tactical, short-term. Then there's objectives. These are plans of action. They should be specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. If you've heard this before, it's the SMART acronym. Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. So an example of an objective would be to purchase additional machinery that would increase production capacity in the next 6 months. We will now move into forecasting techniques. We will discuss regression analysis, learning curve analysis, expected value analysis, and then other forecasting tools. So beginning with regression analysis, this is the mathematical technique used to predict the value of the dependent variable based upon the value of the independent variable. Now we have some pretty detailed examples on regression and the regression equation in the Ninja book and the Ninja notes. For purposes of keeping things all good on the Ninja audio, I'm not going to cover things that don't naturally lend themselves to auditory learning. And as an auditory learner myself, it drives me nuts when people add in stuff that should not be in an audio. So I'm not going to do that to you. So you can go over that in the Ninja book and the Ninja notes. What I'm going to do is give you some key takeaways as I can in each of these in the Ninja audio, and cover things more qualitatively versus quantitatively. Some advantages of regression analysis include simplicity and multiple data points. So linear regression forecasting models are simple to understand and they're relatively easy to implement and evaluate. And they also consider various past data points in forecasting instead of the high-low method, which considers only the highest and the lowest data value. So it's simple and multiple data points are used. Some disadvantages of regression analysis are the effect of outliers, which can significantly impact the forecasts made by the linear regression models, especially if they're extreme, and also the assumption of linearity. So regression equations assume a straight line linear relationship between the independent and dependent variables. But more often than not, the relationships are not linear, which can lead to inaccurate forecasting. Next, we have learning curve analysis. And the assumption behind the learning curve analysis is that people, when they are learning something, do it slower the first time than when they do it the 100th time. And so this is useful for forecasting and budgeting labor costs. Advantages of learning curve analysis include accuracy and planning, because learning curve analysis incorporates future efficiencies and learnings into forecasts, leading to a more accurate budget. And planning, it helps to assist HR planning as it maps out individuals to tasks based on their strengths and weaknesses. Some disadvantages of learning curve analysis are the constant learning rate. So the learning curve analysis assumes a constant learning rate. So let's say it's 80%. However, the learning curve in reality would not be observed at the same rate for all activity levels. So the learning curve might be experienced at a certain rate in one activity level and another in another activity level, depending on the complexity of the task. And so that's a disadvantage because it assumes a constant learning rate. And then another disadvantage is relevance. So it's focused on efficiencies in manual processes. However, in today's age, most manufacturing processes are automated and machine-based, putting the learning curve's relevance into question. Next, we have expected value analysis. While forecasting, managers can forecast multiple possible scenarios. However, it would not be advisable to base the budget on one of the possible scenarios. Instead, managers should combine several scenarios to form an average expected value based on all of the possible scenarios. This is done using the expected value analysis, which is a prediction technique based on scenarios likely to occur in the future with a probability distribution representing the likelihood of each scenario expected to occur to maximize the expected monetary profits or loss. So expected value analysis assigns probabilities to possible outcomes and weighs those outcomes by their respective probabilities to derive a single most likely value. Some advantages of the expected value analysis is that it uses multiple scenarios. So you're not just hanging everything on one possible scenario. And another advantage is that it's simplistic to come up with. Disadvantages include that it's based on estimates and variables and probability of those variables. And estimates are subject to bias and errors, which can make forecasts inaccurate. Another disadvantage is it's not the most likely outcome. Expected value analysis forecasts the average outcome and not the most likely outcome. Therefore, the actual result can be completely different than the forecast. Finally, we have other forecasting tools. The only one that I will draw your attention to here in this audio is sensitivity analysis. And just a little note for exam day. Sensitivity analysis uses what-if scenarios to evaluate possible outcomes, and sensitivity analysis also uses probability theory. So if you get a question which of the following uses probability theory, you're probably going to be sensitive to that question. Our next topic is budgeting methodologies. We begin with a master budget, which is a plan that coordinates and communicates a company's plan for the coming year to all departments and all divisions. And based on the forecasts and standards developed, various budgets are prepared for each function. The master budget consolidates all of these budgets into an overall plan and control document for a budgeted period, and it's divided into two parts, operating and financial. Operating budgets include sales, production, direct materials, direct labor, overhead, cost of goods sold, and selling and administrative expense. Master budget is the blueprint for the organization. And to prepare a master budget, an organization can use a variety and combination of types of budgeting, flexible budgeting, continuous budgeting, etc., which we are about to get into. We begin with flexible budgeting. A static budget is based on the initial level of the output planned and does not change with the actual level of output. So a comparison of actual activities to static budget levels, it's often misleading. This is where flexible budgets come in because they allow for a better comparison with actual costs. So suppose that a firm decides to produce future units than called for in the static budget. In that case, then the static budget would represent a favorable variance as overall costs are less and are misleading because the static budget has not been adjusted to the actual level of activity. The flexible budget adjusts or flexes with changes in volume or activity and is prepared using budgeted rates for the actual level of activity. The use of a flexible budget would compare the difference between the actuals and budgets at the actual level of activity such that it would allow for better control and assessment. And a flexible budget is created using the actual number of units produced, which can be different from the number of units that were used in creating the master budget. So that's the flexible budget. Next, we have a continuous or a rolling budget, which adds a new period into the budget at the end of each budgeting period so that there's always several periods planned for in the future and the budgets remain up to date with the operating environment. The word rolling suggests that a budget for which the addition of 1 month or quarter is accompanied by the dropping of an earlier month or quarter. For example, under regular budgeting at the end of quarter one, an organization has a budget for four more future periods, quarter one, two, three, and four. However, at the end of quarter one, it is budgeted only for three future periods, quarters two, three, and four. In this situation, an organization might not have sufficient budgeted targets, which would reduce employees' focus from the organization's strategy, how it's moving forward into the future. Continuous budgeting, on the other hand, removes these limitations. It adds a new period at the end of each period so that there's always a sufficient number of periods planned. With continuous budgeting at the end of quarter one, the organization would drop the budget for quarter one and add the budget for quarter five while updating the budgets for quarters two, three, and four. So all budgets are updated for the change in the entity's environment, and there's always four periods planned for in the future. Then there's a zero-based budget, which starts from scratch without using the prior year's numbers, and it's forward-looking, so therefore it focuses on constant cost justification. It identifies various programs within each department in an organization, and then it determines the annual cost budgeted for each of the programs. The zero-based budgeting approach looks at operations as if they were just beginning and requires justification for all revenues and expenditures. Zero-based budgets classify budget requests by understanding the benefits arising from each activity, and a request is approved if it provides a benefit, otherwise it's rejected. Then there's the incremental budget, which starts with a prior year's budget and produces increments into the future based upon the preceding year's results and the coming year's expectations. So in contrast to zero-based budgeting, incremental budgeting begins with last period's budget and then makes changes to the old budget. Activity-based budgeting is a budgeting technique in which budgets are prepared using activity-based costing, where overheads are allocated to departments based on the level of activity consumed. Activity-based budgeting systems allocate overhead to each product by using multiple cost drivers. So it provides a better picture of each product's costs compared to the traditional system, which allocates resources based on direct labor hours or machine hours. This cost allocation can help the company make better pricing decisions and submit competitive bids, enhancing the overall effectiveness of the budgeting process. And there's project budgeting, which is used to budget for projects which exist as a separate entity from all other elements of a company. Project budgeting is used for one specific client or assignment, such as a movie production or a special order. Under project budgeting, all costs pertaining to the project are tracked and budgeted directly for the project, and each project is evaluated as a separate entity. And then finally, we have life cycle budgeting, which focuses on individual products and attempts to budget the costs of the product over the entire life cycle from research and development all the way through to customer support. Now, when we were discussing the master budget a few moments ago, we said it was broken down into the operating budget and the financial budget, operating budgets and financial budgets. And for operating budgets, they included sales, production, direct materials, direct labor, overhead, cost of goods sold, and selling and administrative expense budgets. Now we will jump into each of these within the operating budget, beginning with the sales budget. So the first step in the sales and the budgeting process, given the goals and policies of operation, is to forecast the level of sales for the budget period. So consideration must be given to general economic conditions, the company's pricing policy, expected sales, past sales levels, the company's relative market position, trends, etc. The sales budget should be broken down by geographic locations, product lines, and sales entities to facilitate the control function of budgeting. So that's the sales budget. Then the production budget calculates the number of units required to be produced to meet the expected sales targets, usually determined by the sales or marketing departments. So once that has been determined, then the production budget can be prepared. It uses budgeted sales, beginning inventory, and the desired ending inventory to calculate the necessary production. That's the production budget. Then there's the direct materials budget. So after the production budget has been prepared, the inventory levels, usage, and purchase requirements for the raw materials may be determined. This budget indicates the cost and quantities of raw materials needed to meet production requirements and to conform to company policies. Based on the production budget, the company first determines the units and cost of direct material required for production. This is done using the direct material usage budget. And then once the direct material requirement is established, then the company determines the number of units of direct materials to be purchased. This is done using a direct material purchase budget. It uses the budgeted direct materials requirement, the beginning inventory of direct materials, and the desired ending inventory of direct materials to calculate the necessary purchases. So that's the direct materials budget. Then the direct labor budget is prepared from the production budget. This budget indicates the hours and the cost of direct labor needed to meet the production requirements. In addition to the cost of wages, an organization can estimate the cost of employee benefits, such as the employer-paid portion of employee taxes, fringe benefits, health insurance, retirement benefits, etc. So that was the direct labor budget. Then the overhead budget. So overheads are indirectly related to the production of the finished product. Examples would be indirect materials like oil for machines, indirect labor, supervisors' wages, utilities, property taxes on the manufacturing facility. The overhead budget is usually divided into fixed and variable costs. Direct material and direct labor are applied to the product based on the actual cost, but because costs can be assigned to the product before actual overhead can be determined and allocated, a predetermined rate is used for overhead. So overheads can be allocated based on the direct labor hours or machine hours, or applied using activity-based costing. So that's the overhead budget. Now the cost of goods sold budget presents the total cost of producing the product sold for a period. It's created after the production, direct materials, direct labor, and overhead budgets are developed. The cost of goods sold budget also presents the cost of goods manufactured and the cost of goods available for sale. Then the selling, general, and administrative expense budget. This budget refers to period costs expensed in the period incurred. These are non-manufacturing expenses that could be both fixed or variable. Selling expenses related to salaries and commissions for the sales department, whereas G&A expenses include office salaries, rents, utilities, depreciation, etc. All these expenses must be budgeted for effective planning. So after all of these budgets, then you have the pro forma income statement. A company's operating budget starts with a sales budget. The production budget is then prepared based on that sales budget. The production budget includes a direct materials budget, direct labor budget, overhead budget, and selling and administrative expense budget. All of these budgets culminate in the development of the pro forma income statement. The pro forma income statement can also be referred to as the budgeted income statement. These statements will show the results of operation if the plans as outlined in the budgets are achieved. These statements will be analyzed by top management to determine if the results of planned future operations are consistent with the enterprise's objectives and goals. When conflicts are identified, the planning process then begins anew. So a pro forma income statement, sales from the sales budget, less cost of goods sold from the cost of goods sold budget, giving you gross profit, less SG&A expense from the SG&A budget, giving you operating profit, then minus taxes, so just assume a tax rate, 30% or whatever. So operating profit times taxes, giving you net income on the pro forma income statement. Now, after all other budgets have been prepared, covering all aspects of the enterprise's operations, their effects on cash flows are then summarized in the cash budget. The annual cash budget is usually broken down into multiple monthly or weekly periods or shorter for the very near future, showing the itemized cash receipts and disbursements during the budget period, including financing activities and the beginning and ending cash balances. A cash budget is a plan to forecast the cash outflows and inflows of a firm based on the projected sales and purchases and other recurring expenses. So it helps anticipate cash shortages or excesses, which assists managers in planning the firm's operations effectively. So a cash budget takes into account all cash revenues and expenses. Non-cash expenses such as depreciation and amortization, these don't affect cash balances and are thus excluded from the cash budget. So to present an accurate picture of the cash balance, both sales and purchases should be considered. Therefore, the best set of transactions to be included in a cash budget is projected sales and purchases, percentages of collections, and payment terms. So a cash budget is useful in the planning process because it helps management with information concerning expected sources and uses of funds, availability of funds for investment purposes, needs for external financing, availability of funds for the repayment of debt, and availability of funds for distribution to owners. Finally, we have the pro forma balance sheet and the pro forma statement of cash flows. The pro forma balance sheet projects the financial position of a company and illustrates how the budgeted plan would affect the company's assets, liabilities, and stockholders' equity. The development of a cash budget should be done before the pro forma balance sheet, and as the cash budget reveals information that is necessary for the preparation of the pro forma balance sheet. Then finally, the pro forma statement of cash flows is the last schedule to be prepared in the normal budget preparation process. It converts the accrual-based budgeting income statement and balance sheet into cash-based information to permit the creation of the integrated pro forma statement of cash flows. This concludes strategic planning and budgeting.